Hello and welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin, and today our programme is coming to you from our bureau in Zurich. My guest was born in Switzerland. He took courses in a variety of fields and he even interned in a psychiatric clinic. He settled in Zurich to pursue writing and he's since thrived. He's been nominated for the International Man Booker Prize and the German equivalent of the Pulitzer. He's seen as a very unique and original writer in Europe, writing prose, radio drama, film and plays. He's one of the best-selling and most popular contemporary Swiss authors. Peter Stamm, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming in. I know that you live about 20 minutes outside this beautiful, beautiful city.
Yeah, it's not so far. In London, it would be like just next door.
Mm-hmm. So. Is that where you grew up? Tell me about your early life
here. No, I grew up even farther to the east, in the east end of Switzerland. Oh, it's a hilly region next to the Lake Constance, huge lake, and it's a village of 9,000 people at the time. Now it's a bit bigger. And it's a farmer's place, lots of farmers, apple farming, strawberries. So it's a quiet and nice place.
But in fact, your father was an accountant.
Yeah. There was a time when many people couldn't get the education. They merited in a way. I mean, he was extremely interested in arts and in literature, but his family just couldn't afford to send him to university. So he became an accountant. What influenced me was more like his love for poetry, for music, for art. That was an important influence.
But in fact, you actually trained as an accountant.
Yeah, I was fed up with school after the school I had to go to. And then I was good at school, so they told me, well, why not become an accountant? Which was fine in a way. It was an interesting company I worked for.
So at what stage then did you decide that you were going to leave that behind you and become a storyteller?
Well, pretty soon. I mean, after 1 year of apprenticeship, I realized that wasn't the job I wanted to do, but I still finished it just to have something in my pocket in a way. And then I already knew that I wanted to become a writer, and it just took me a little while to publish my first book.
Who were you reading at that time? Who were your early influences?
Very important influence was Ernest Hemingway. It was really, really important to me. Also Ibsen, strangely. Camus was important. Cesare Pavese.
Well, and you've been compared to Camus, haven't you? A lot of people say your writing is very similar.
Well, these comparisons are always a bit tricky, but anyway, yeah, I love him a lot, even today, and also Hemingway. I still read him, and it is still great literature to me.
You did a variety of other jobs, though, before actually getting into writing full-time. Tell me about some of those experiences.
Well, I did. When I was at university, I worked at the airport for almost 7 years. Even afterwards, when I was an aspiring writer, I worked loading and unloading airplanes, which was fun to work physically when you were in the evening writing your texts, and just during the day to be outside to do heavy work. At that time, it was quite easy in Switzerland to get jobs as a student to try out things.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you also interned in a psychiatric clinic.
Yeah, that was part of my studies. When I started to study, I did psychology and psychopathology, so I got the chance to go to psychiatric clinics, which was an extremely interesting experience.
And of course, you can kind of see that coming through in your work. Your work is very psychological.
I hope that it's not too psychological. I mean, it's based on a knowledge of psychology, I'd say, but it's not. I'm trying not to describe cases, psychiatric cases, so it's in a way, to me, these people are not, well, they are just people that I'm interested in, and I try not to be their doctor, but just to be some kind of a friend or a companion.
Mm. Tell me about then your journey to publication, because you started writing, as you say, when you were doing all of these other jobs, you were a student. Mm. How did that unfold?
Well, what I did not do is what many young writers do today, that they start going to festivals, that they publish in literary magazines, and I didn't do all that. I was quite on my own in a way. I had absolutely no contact to the literary scene, and I just worked for years and years on my stuff, and nobody wanted to publish it because it was bad, I mean, to be honest. And I didn't look for any help in a way, which I should have maybe. So it took me quite a while to realize what was good writing and how I should write.
How do you realize that? How do you come to that?
Well, it was by failing and realizing what wasn't good with my texts, and then trying again and failing again and trying again. And it takes longer time if you do it on your own, I think. It might have helped if I had had people who would have told me what was wrong with my texts. But then on the other hand, maybe I just needed the time to develop, because it's also a personal thing. It's not just learning how to write. It's mostly personal development. And I was a boy from a village. So in a way, I maybe just needed time to become confident enough and to publish.
And you've described yourself as living in various cities around Europe, writing bad novels.
Yeah. During 9/11, I was in London, and that was a very strange time in London. So the whole atmosphere in town was strange, and I couldn't sort that out and wrote a very confused text.
And that work that you abandon, is it ever truly abandoned, or does it come back into your writing later?
As a text, it doesn't come back, because there is no use to work on text for me, because once it's failed, it's failed. It's like when you cook a soup and there is too much salt in it, you can't undo it. So I start anew, but the themes are always the same. So in a way, I realize sometimes that it's something I've written about before, but in a completely different way.
Mm. Well, let's talk about themes, because there is a kind of overarching theme, really, that goes through all of your work. How would you describe that?
One theme that recurs all the time is like fiction and reality. I mean, that I'm trying to create real worlds, but at the same time, I'm aware how dangerous that is, and that it's not possible to write a text that becomes real. So it's always about these themes. It's also always about relationships between people, of course, but that's quite obvious. I mean,
often failed marriages, it's the ambivalence between partners in communication and all the rest of it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like many painters paint nudes. It's not about naked people. It's about how to do your art on this specific object, but what happens in my book is not really the most important. It's more a way to do what I want to do.
Plot minute detail, but then you leave big spaces where we might expect a piece of plot to develop.
It's all play with spaces and with times to create a kind of reality, but then at the same time to... It's hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in lots of ways, the important things happen off stage, so to speak.
Yeah. I'll be at the university in November talking about my work, and there I said that my goal would be to be completely silent. So I try to take out things out of my text, and so there is less and less, less people, less action. So I have had an idea of writing a novel without any characters, for example, and in the end I hope that I will just be quiet and maybe publish a book without any words. Won't be a bestseller, I guess.
No, maybe, who knows? Maybe not. But you've talked about the fact that you don't plot, you just allow the narrative to unfold.
Yeah, a text is like a living being. I mean, it's growing, and somehow it chooses its own way. I really don't think you should plot as an author, because a novel, a text, is not a machine. So to me, it's a living being, and it's growing, and it somehow develops in a world. That's my world. And depending on whether I write in summer or in winter or whether I go on holidays, that will change the text, and that's perfectly okay.
And you've also said that you need the reader to work for it, really.
Yeah, I mean, reading and writing is not so different. In a way, you have words. I write down the words, but it's, in a way, images that I transfer into words, and the reader has to transfer these words back into images and into a real world in his mind. So it's, in a way, it's the same process. It's just I get paid and they have to pay, which is fine.
Let's talk about your breakthrough. So how did you finally get published?
Well, it was more or less by accident. Switzerland was a guest country at a book fair in Frankfurt, and everybody was looking for Swiss writers. And I met at a birthday party, I met a woman from an agent. And she said, well, I'm looking for books. And I said, well, I have a book in my drawer. And I sent it to her, and she published it. Or she sold it to a publisher. But on the other hand, I mean, it seems like an accident. But then I think it was my first good book, I would say. The first book that actually worked. And all the books I had written before wouldn't have worked like that. So if she had met her 2 years before, then it wouldn't have worked.
Tell me about that book.
It's called Agnes, and it's about a writer who writes a book about his girlfriend, and somehow in the book the girlfriend dies, and so we never know if she actually follows the story. So in a way, it's how a story can influence our life. Or to me, it was like how images that we have of other people can influence the life of these people.
And the word image there, of course, very important, because that went on to become a film.
Yeah, and also it was read in schools in Germany for the last few years. Hundreds of thousands of people had to read it. And I was in schools very often. And what we realized talking to these kids it's a book about the Facebook generation, because we're constantly making images of ourselves and of others, and these images influence our lives. Mm-hmm. So in a way, even before Facebook era, it was somehow about this whole thing that's happening now.
Now, of course, it's not only in German-speaking countries that you're well-known. You're well-known all over Europe because you've been translated into so many languages. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit about translation and your work with your translator. You always use the same translator.
In English, yes, but in some countries they changed after a few books for different reasons. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Michael Hoffman translates you into English.
Luckily.
He's an award winner. He's translated Kafka. He's translated Joseph Roth. And I just wonder about that relationship between writer and translator, particularly when you are able to talk the language in which he is translating it very well.
He knows what he's doing, so he never asks me questions. There are translators who ask me 100 questions for every book they translate, but Michael hardly ever asks me anything. Not just a question of quality, it's just not his style, maybe. Well, we've become friends, and I really like him a lot, and I also like his work. He's a poet also. For every book, I do make a fact sheet with like citations and stuff like that for the translators to help them. But for the rest, it's mainly a friendship, not a working relationship.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, when a book is in translation, is that still your work, or is it a shared work?
Well, it is and it is not. If I read the translation, I recognize, of course, each sentence, but then it's not my words. So it's a very strange thing to read your own text in translation, because then you realize it is my text, but it is not at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your prizes, because, of course, you've been nominated for the International Man Booker in 2013, All Days and Night. Tell us about that.
That was a really difficult book. It took me a long time to write it. And that was the only time I abandoned the book and then tried to finish it 5 years later. It's about a woman who loses her face anyway. She's a TV person, and she has an accident and loses her face. The book is somehow about her healing, and when you lose your face, you also lose your personality in a way. So it's the story about how she becomes a person again and how she builds up a new kind of personality.
What for you was different about that book from others that haven't been nominated for such a big prize?
The thing was that this whole project was somehow like the face of this woman. It didn't really work. It was shattered, and then I had to somehow fix it. And so in a way, the form of the book is content at the same time. And that's always the best thing, if you somehow, the content is not just on a story level, but also in the form.
And that form obviously changes depending on what medium you're writing for. So, I mean, for instance, you do radio too, and plays.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done so much dramatic writing in the last few years, but I have done it, yeah. No, it's completely different. I can't do both at the same time, so it's really, I have to somehow get out of prose and then tell myself, now I'm going to write dramatic texts. But I do prefer prose in a way. It's my absolutely favorite thing, because there a friend of mine called it to play God. It's only you, and there is no director who comes, and the stuff with your text, it's really your decisions.
And are you thinking about the reader at that point?
No. I think the only way to appreciate the reader is to not think about him. It's not for children. I mean, I'm writing a text that when I finish the text, it somehow gets independent of me, and then I just put it in a room and people can take it and do whatever they want with it. Mm. And I'm not the kind of writer who takes the reader by the hand and tells him, well, like the old uncle who tells you a story, a bedtime story. It's completely independent of me and of the reader.
So you were talking about how the seasons, for instance, affect your writing. And I just want to know a little bit about your process. So how would you go about it if it's, say, a piece of prose?
A friend of mine called it, she said, it's not about a theme. It's more like about a question. In the beginning of a book, there is often a question. What would happen if, or what's all this thing about? And then I carry it around with me for a long time. Sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's 10 days. I mean, it depends. And there always must be this first moment where you have the idea for the first sentence. That usually happens just like that, anytime. And then I sit down and start writing, slowly. That's a Hemingway lesson, that you shouldn't write more than 600 words a day. And I wouldn't say exactly 600 words, but I try to work slowly so the text can grow
You're a man who's had a few relationships, and within your books, of course, there are men who are around about your age. They've also been through relationships. Often those are dysfunctional relationships. Mm. And I wonder how much your central characters are autobiographical.
Not at all, I would say. I mean, the themes I'm writing about are the themes that interest me, that somehow have something to do with me. But I don't even know what they have to do with me and why I have these themes, but it's always the same. But I'm not interested in writing about myself. And maybe I'm, in a way, more personal than if I would write an autobiography, because then I would start lying immediately. Because when you write about yourself, of course you want to look good. By writing about other people, I probably put more of myself into the books.
I wanted to ask you about your book, To the Back of Beyond, which is where basically a couple come back from their holiday and the man walks out the house and just keeps going.
That was one idea that took me a long time. I had this image of the man walking at night through Switzerland and never knew who he was and why he ran away. And then I met Michael Cunningham and he gave me a story by Hawthorne, Wakefield. And then these two pieces came together and I started writing this story, which is more or less the Wakefield story, a man walking away for no reason, walking and walking and coming back after 20 years, or maybe not coming back. It's not the same story as Wakefield. So in my book, he falls in the mountains, he dies, and then he just goes on.
It's not the only one of your works that's based on something else, because, of course, in your book, 7 Years, that was inspired by a Polish writer.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely normal to be inspired by other artworks, and it's usually something completely different, but maybe it's the same question in the beginning, that Gombrowicz had the same question, and it was the question that interests me. What happens if somebody loves you and you don't love this person? Does this person have power over you by just her love? And so it's I'm highly influenced by all kinds of things. Mm. Not just writers, also artists and musicians.
Can you turn a piece of visual art into prose?
I have friends who are painters and who do very... The best known is maybe Edward Hopper. When you look at his images, you see stories. It's not just painting, it's really a story. And there are lots of painters who paint stories in a way.
You talk about your work in schools, and I'm wondering what you're finding in terms of this Facebook generation, the millennials, how much they're reading and how much this digital age has influenced what kids are taking in terms of literature.
What I hear from in bookshops, that they say many young people should read fantasy, which is a shame in a way. I'm sure there is great fantasy, but if it's only fantasy, you miss a lot. But when I talk to students, I have a feeling they are very smart, they are very confident, they ask good questions, they're interested. I had good experiences in schools.
Mm. People often complain about the fact that all of us, not just kids, our attention spans are so much shorter now because of the constant demand on our time digitally. Mm. And I know that you also write short stories, which perhaps is the way to countermand that.
Yeah, but then on the other hand, all those fantasy books, they have like 600, 800 pages. So in a way, I mean, there is this need for the long story that you can read for days and days. So I'm not so sure about that. But it's true, of course, and this does change literature also. I mean, when I read literature from the 19th century, of course, very often I think, well, it's really slow. I mean, this is really, he's taking his time, which is great, but I think it's okay that we write differently today because it's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good or bad, it's just different.
People say that short stories are having a moment, although people who write short stories get very cross about that sometimes and say, well, they've never not had a moment. People just haven't really recognized
them.
How do you feel about the short story as a form?
Well, I've often compared it to chamber music, and that's a kind of music I like more than the big symphony in a way. It's very concentrated. Each word counts. In a big novel, you can do whatever you want, but in a short story, it's really... You hear every little sound, and it's extremely concentrated, extremely worked out. I think I work in a way more on a short story per page than on a novel. So it's a form that I like a lot. Maybe it's a Swiss form because we are the watchmakers and really do small stuff that's very precise.
Do you think that there is a kind of Swiss national trait that people do take through into their writing?
Maybe not one, because we have, it's like quite a mixed country in a way. The four languages, but also lots of foreigners who are in Switzerland. So many, many young writers have a foreign background, for example, came from the East, from some Eastern countries. So it's a very international country in a way. We always try to give you that image of the farming nation, cows and cheese and chocolate, but that's not Switzerland. Switzerland is a very modern and very open society in a way.
Yeah. I mean, would you define yourself as a Swiss writer or just a writer?
No. Peter Pixelmann said, I'm a writer from Switzerland, but not a Swiss writer, and I completely agree.
Now, your books aren't always based here in Switzerland. They're based in many places around Europe, but you live and you work here. And I'm very interested in finding out more about the city. I've just arrived here. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. But I wonder if you stop seeing that after a while.
I used to live just in this neighborhood for 5 years before we had kids. And no, I did see the beauty, but I also saw the not so nice things. It's great for tourism, but it's not the happiest city in the world. And people are a bit stressed and not very relaxed. It's a very Protestant city, and people are constantly looking at each other if everybody's wearing the right shoes and being cool. And so it's a bit, to me, Winterthur, where I live, it's an industrial town, or used to be an industrial town. It's much more relaxed.
And the publishing industry here, what sort of state is that in?
Well, most publishers are small publishers. There is only one big publishing house, Diogenes. We have very good publishers, I mean, doing great stuff. There is one who does mainly third world literature, but on a very high level. I mean, they are suffering like everybody, but I would say it's a good industry.
You were talking about doing a novel that perhaps has no people in it at all, and I just wonder what your next plans are.
I have some vague ideas, but it's very vague, so I couldn't even tell you something. It's right now I'm waiting for the first sentence to pop up.
And where does that sentence usually come from?
That's really like a flash. That one day in the morning you wake up and you have the sentence in your mind.
I want to just talk a little bit more about prizes and ask you what difference that makes to your work. So for instance, after the International Man Booker, suddenly you're recognised on the international stage as this great author. Does it affect the way you write?
No. It's like the two parts of my job. One is the writing, and that's the important thing. That's what I like. And then there is the other part, publicity and doing readings. And I do lots of readings. I mean, this year I do 100 readings and prizes and all this stuff. I like that too, but it's not really that important. It's important for being able to live from my work, but it's not influencing my work, not at all. It shouldn't. I mean, if you start writing the novels people want you to write, then that's not good. That's not art.
The Independent newspaper in London said, Peter Stamm's novels are not where you go for happy endings. What would you say to that?
I think in all my novels, at the end, people are better off than in the beginning, which does not always mean that they like marry and be happy for the rest of their lives, but they somehow, in all my books, I think they realized something or they changed their lives. And they maybe at the end are at a new start, which to me is in a way a happy ending. But it's not the classical happy ending, yeah.
What's your happy ending?
It's that learning something about you, yourself, and changing things. There is no stability in luck. I mean, it's only in fairy tales that they live happily ever after. But in novels, the ending is always a new beginning. There is no ending.
Peter Stamm, we've come to our ending.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed. Peter's novels are currently published by Granta, and you can find his work widely translated in a lot of languages all over Europe. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Many thanks to the production team of George McDonough, Kieran Banerjee, Anna Savetska and Christy Evans. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, MixCloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.